grateful to be here today. Thank you, Chip, for introducing me tonight. I want to give thanks to you guys here for having me speak. My sober date is 3/18/21. Tonight, I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about my story, how self-will has played an interesting part in my journey to find recovery, as well as my connection to my higher power. I'm the oldest of six kids. I grew up in Wisconsin and had a fairly normal, I guess, childhood. My dad was a coach more than he was a parent. I would do 100 left-hand layups before I could have dinner kind of thing. He cut down a tree, put a tire on it so I could hit my baseball bat against it. And I was always taught that, like, no matter what, persevere, you can do this. And put your head down. And I kind of developed a weird sense of humility and not really understanding what that was. We ended up moving from Wisconsin to Seattle for my freshman year of high school. And at that time, one of the first persons I saw was my wife. I was 15, and I knew at that point that she was it. So I started dating her. And in high school, I experimented with marijuana and smoked occasionally. And it was never really a thing. And looking back at it now, I can see how my disease noticed that, being able to escape, being able to battle my anxiety. Anxiety is something that I've just come to terms with recently. I've had it my whole life. I just thought that's how life worked. And alcohol was how I used, was my medication, what I used to suppress that. I played sports in high school and I went to college on an art scholarship. And that's where I really found alcohol. Partying on the weekends and enjoying drinking during the week. And we always like, guys, come on, we're in college. It's Wednesday, let's go out. And it was fun for me, it was adventurous. But when I needed to stop, I could. And then I got married at 22 and I went to Hollywood and I worked in the film industry for a while. And that was great, it was eye-opening. And I have big expectations I put on myself and I like to strive to go for that, again, with that willpower of trying to make things happen, almost manifest by putting a lot of work in. And so after a year, I decided I was going to go to film school and get a degree in screenwriting and cinematography. Me and my wife, we moved to Denver, so I could start school. I took up a job bartending so I could make money to pay for it. And I soon found myself switching jobs to the bars that would let me drink during my shifts. And my disease started to pick up. I got my first DUI. But this wasn't my fault. It was the cops. He was following me from Boulder. He followed me for 20 miles. I didn't have anything to do with it. And I was barely over the legal limit. I remember getting my assessment and all the bar patrons told me, oh, just lie. Say you're Mormon. So I told them, oh, I'm Mormon. That's the first time I really drank. And they bought it. So I didn't get any treatment, any classes, anything like that. So I'd begun to learn how to lie and manipulate and hide what was really going on. Then after school, I opened a video production company in Denver. And I ran that with a close friend of mine. And we had mild to, you know, some months were very, very successful. But now I could find that I could drink on set. And I almost used it for some kind of creative outlet. And it, you know, when I had these deadlines, I had to get a video done in 2 weeks. And I would just sit at the computer and drink to get through it. And I specifically remember the day I became an alcoholic, I think. I picked up a couple shifts at this bar and I had been drinking all day and, I woke up in the morning, it was like 8 o'clock and I had to go in and open the bar and I felt like crap. And then this voice came in my head, why don't you just have a drink and love yourself up? I remember opening that bottle and like, really? Am I going to do this? And I like, and the voice just kind of said, you need to, you got to function, you got to go to work. And that's really, I think, the day where it really took over. So it came to kind of a head. My wife was in Seattle visiting family with my newborn daughter. And she was gone for a week and I had to pick her up at the airport. So the night before, I closed the bar down and on my way home, end up getting pulled over. And this is now my second DUI. And instead of being able to be there in the morning to pick up my wife and daughter, I was in jail. And now that might have been a turning point for some people, but for me, my drinking increased because I could not accept life on life's terms. I couldn't accept that this was happening. I was okay with misery. I was used to that. So my drinking increased. And eventually, my wife went to a hotel and I got a lawyer. I kept pushing the DUI stuff off because I didn't want to deal with all the hoops you have to jump through. Why me? You know? And there was a knock at my apartment door because we'd gone from a nice house to a small little apartment. And it was my parents, my wife's parents, and my pastor. And they said, we're taking Kim back to Seattle. Do you want to come? And I said, whoa. Okay. I didn't know how it was going to work with the legal system or anything, but I knew I needed help. They threw me in the car and we drove straight through to Seattle. And I showed up, went to my first AA meeting. It was a birthday meeting in Federal Way. And that was my first ever look into the program. And I said, okay, I'm going to do this. But I went at it completely wrong. I tried to use that willpower. And eventually I mustered almost three years of sobriety, dry time. And, you know, things started to come back into my life, but it's like what it says on page 82. This is me. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is to keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or to the parents of whom he's so shockingly treated. Alcohol is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken. Sweet relationships are ended. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking, or I wrote stupid. We feel a man is stupid when he says that sobriety is enough. And so I started getting things in my life, but my behaviors hadn't changed. I didn't realize how much alcohol had shifted my thinking and the way I lived. In order to keep my addiction alive, I had to learn how to do things like lie and manipulate to get you to do what I wanted to do, to whatever, at all costs, to not separate you from the bottle. I take the bottle away, and I still had those same behaviors. I still had those same character defects, but I wasn't doing anything about them. So I was coming up on 3 years, and it was around Christmas time. My wife was out of town. I was going to decorate the house. And I said, you know what? I think I got this. I've been to a bunch of meetings. You know, I've seen this guy speak. I like hearing the stories, but this 12 steps, that seems like a lot of work. And like, I'm a Christian, so I already know there's a higher power kind of thing. So I think I got this. And I went out and bought a nice bottle of whiskey to decorate the house. Within 4 hours, I was back at the store buying another one. And it's like someone hit fast forward in my life. And I lost 3 years to drinking every day. I'm an alcoholic. I have a disease that tells me I don't have a disease. When I use, I can't stop. I use time and time and time again. And it's my disease is very progressive. So there was a night after that three-year run when I opened a new restaurant and I was overworking. I was drinking every day and I decided I was going to kill myself. And that's the first time I ever contemplated or thought about suicide. And I felt my higher power hit me over the back of the head and say, you need help. So I jumped in my car, drunk, of course, and drove to my mother-in-law's house. And I said, I need help. What can we do? And so they brought me to the emergency room, into detox. And eventually I found North Point. I did an inpatient there. And I started to get a grasp on things. And I started really understanding that I need this program and I need to get involved. And I need CHIP. That's what I kept saying in treatment. I was like, I need CHIP. So halfway through my stay, coronavirus hit. I went in to treatment with the world as I knew it. And then things started shutting down and falling apart. And I had no idea what it was going to look like when I got out. And I'm like, how am I going to go to meetings? What's going on? I'm ready to work the program. I don't know what to do. So I got out. Meetings were shut down. I stayed with my sister for a while. And I ended up eventually moving back home. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to work on my relationships. I'm just going to work on staying connected to the people that I know that are in recovery, try some Zoom meetings and stuff like that. But again, it tells me that's stupid. And it's that willpower and that self motivation that's false and empty. It has nothing to do with my connection to my high power. It's me running the show. And so I celebrated yet another year of sobriety. My wife got a little cake, and it was small, but it was good. 2 days later, yeah. 2 days later, she told me that she wanted to separate and she wanted a divorce. So I had lost my love of my life sober. And that just messed with my mind. Like, what the heck is going on? I'm sober. I'm not drinking. Book tells me that's not enough. My behaviors, my attitudes are still there. So and because of COVID, I didn't really know where to go. All my family is in Wisconsin. And so her family is like my family now. There's a boundary. So I called up one of my friends from treatment up in Maryville, and I was staying up there and coming back down on the weekends to see my daughter. I mean, I homeschooled her. I'm a different kind of father. Me and her are like this. And to not be able to tuck her in, I couldn't deal with it. I stopped eating, and my mental health went to crap. And so it only took about a month after my 1 year where I hit that suicidal thinking again. And I realized I couldn't do it if I was sober. So I went to Fred Meyer, and I bought a bottle. And I remember taking that drink and just spitting it out because I didn't want it. I had no desire to drink. It had been lifted for whatever reason. But I forced it down. And I went on a 3-day binge with getting ready to end my life. And then out of nowhere, maybe this is something I needed to focus on, is my wife called and I said, my mental health is shot. I didn't tell her I was drinking. She goes, well, why don't you call North Point? Because they have it's a dual diagnosis and they have all your information. So after a 3-day relapse, I checked myself back into a 28-day program. I hate this disease. I hate that I can't control it. I needed a guarantee that I could get 30 days. So I went in there, and it was a gift because I wasn't detoxing. I wasn't coming off a whole bunch of things. I was like a sober person going into a rehab center. And I could explore the psych team and really look at some of my mental health stuff. I was diagnosed with ADHD and anxiety, and I have medication to take for that now. And how much that dictated how I thought I felt and what I needed to do about it. But I had a spiritual awakening there. There was a counselor who's been in AA for a very long time. And I knocked on his door and I said, Lau, do you have a second? I came in there and I sat down. And I said, I have a question for you. He goes, okay. In his beard, he had a long beard. And I go, what do you think about willpower? Well, actually, no, I said, I think it's taken me 5 years to come up with the question. I don't even have the answer, but I think it took me this long to come up with the question. What do you think about willpower? And Lau looks at me and goes, well, what do you think about willpower? Total counselor move, right? I said, I think it's dangerous. He goes, you're right in the pocket. I go, how can I do this? How can I recover from alcoholism? How can I better my relationships? How can I advance my career? How can I do and get the things that I want and need for life if I don't have enough willpower to do it? Sorry, I'll wrap it up here. And then what I realized was, or he looked me in the face and said, I asked that question to my sponsor a long time ago. And he said, your recovery is none of your business. It's God's business. And he told me that, a weight lifted off me. I've been trying to run my own recovery. I have not been connecting to my higher power. And from that moment, everything changed. I started working the steps for this man. On June 11th, I took my third step, and that was a big day for me. I gave up my life, my will to the care. Care means implies love to me, my higher power. And I get to do that every day. And the more I stay connected with him, the better. And, you know, since treatment, I've been keeping a gratitude list, and I realized, looking through it, this is proof of how my higher power is taking care of me. And I'll just end with this, and how important this program is to me, and how important my connection to my higher power is, and how he's taking care of me. I met this man 5 years ago when I had my sobriety, listening to him share, seeing all his sponsees and stuff, and like that, like wanting it, but not really ready to surrender. And then when I was on my tear, I flew to Hawaii, and I'm sitting in the airport or in the airplane. I open up the in-flight magazine. I see Chip. He started a program for stewardess and people in the airlines who need recovery. He's in my life again. And finally, I was able to connect someone at the Alano Club that had his number. And Chip's big thing, and you may hear it, is the man in the mirror. That's kind of came up when he was getting sober. I'm looking at the man in the mirror, begging him to change his ways. That's his song. Well, I ended up calling him and leaving a voicemail. Little did I know that he was having some using dreams, right? And his sponsor had mentioned, well, when's the last time you sponsored somebody? And he goes, well, it's been a minute. So I left him a voicemail, and the night after his sponsor told that, he opens up his phone. There's a voicemail for me asking him to be a sponsor. And then his radio starts playing, and it's Man in the Mirror. So I'm so thankful for this man. I'm so thankful for this program. I didn't think I was going to talk for 15 minutes, but I guess I did. So I want to talk a little bit more about the solution, but I think we can hear that next. So thank you guys for letting me share. Thank you.